Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Something's brewing. A new partnership with Last Drinks and Buds and Beads. Order your sparkling tea today by visiting budsandbeads.com.au and use the code LASTDRINKS20 for a 20% discount at checkout.
It's time for another episode of Last Drinks, a podcast where we have conversations for the sober and the sober curious. Hosted by me, Maz Compton, sober since 2015.
Hey, hey.
Hi. Yes, let's dig in. Let's get another episode of Last Drinks out into the universe, out of my mouth and into people's ear holes. Before we jump in to today's episode, which is with one of the coolest, most chill, and highly Aria nominated, if that's a thing, Aussie artists. He's a blues muso and he's released 9 studio albums. He's a legend. Before we talk to Ash Grunwald, I just wanted to let you guys know that if you have landed on this podcast because you're sober curious or you're early into trying to figure out how you can exist in this big bad world without a drink in your hand and still have fun and still thrive in social environments or still get through a tough day or a long night without alcohol, I have put together with my very good friend Lindy Cohen, who's a dietitian and nutritionist, an audio guide to help you through that process. We aim to answer every question you will probably have in early sobriety with an episode of a podcast, basically. So we talk you through it, we hold your hand, we give you practical tips, we share our stories of what we did individually, and our approach to living without booze in some ways is very different. And I think that that's a real benefit to hear, that there are different avenues to do it. So it's a guided audio series and you can hear it at myboozebreak.com. The first episode is free, so maybe jump into that and have a listen and see if that's something that you want to dig into. And you can do a quiz as well online to figure out what kind of a drinker you are. There's lots of resources there, and we're also doing live webinars as well. So all the info's on the website, myboozebreak.com, or we have created a closed Facebook group called Booze Break. If you want to have a bit of a chat in a really safe and closed Facebook group, we've created one that Lindy and I jump into quite often to answer questions and to have conversations and to share our thoughts. So just wanted to put that out there, that is a resource that's available to anybody who is keen to take me up on the offer. To today's podcast. So Ash Grunwald, I feel like we circled around each other in the music biz when I was kicking around on MTV. He's a blues muso. I've seen him perform at blues and roots festivals and many, many stages over the years. He's fantastic. He's married to Danny Carr, who I interviewed on the podcast on the 1st of January this year. So they're a bit of a sober duo, these two. And together they have a podcast in the community called How I Quit Alcohol, which I can recommend you getting around if you want, again, some, you know, info, some tips, some tools, some guidance, some support. They are just so, they're wonderful, they're passionate, and they're brilliant. They're a brilliant duo and they're individually equally excellent humans. And I loved my chat with Ash. So I've heard Danny's side of the story because they quit drinking at the same time as a married couple. So I've heard Danny's side of the story, as have you. And if you haven't, you can go and check out her podcast episode from January 1 this year. But this is Last Drinks with the very talented and very chilled Ash Grunwald.
Ash, it is so lovely to have you on the podcast. Can you tell me about your last drink?
Oh, my last drink was, it was like a attempted last hurrah piss up kind of thing with an acknowledgement that, you know, we were going to quit for a year after it. But I think it still did from memory, probably involved mid-strengths because I was starting to try and I had been drinking them to behave myself a little bit, try to, and then I might have paced it and thought, oh, I'm doing all right. Okay, now I'll just nip off to the pantry and have a shot of something or whatever. It might have been that kind of vibe. But
sure.
Yeah.
And do you know, because I'm obviously this is the same date as your lovely wife, Danny Carr's last drink. So we're talking 5 years ago. New Year's Eve, that kind of vibe?
Almost six years ago. Six in a month's time.
Yowzers! So yeah. For you, I mean, I feel like I know you, I know your music. I feel like at one point in time we were circling around the same music industry peeps. And so it feels like you were living that rock and roll dream, like on the road and like thrashing guitars and with your band. And like, was that kind of your experience of those days, like leading up to this last drink? Was it all rock and roll?
Yeah. And it got a bit more rock and roll as time went on because I started in the roots scene. Well, I started playing blues music around Melbourne. And the blues scene, you know, was like I was just this young, sheltered, wide-eyed kind of kid, and there was like I ended up playing in like bikey hangouts and like it was that kind of drinking culture. But I wasn't getting slaughtered in those days, but it was already like, okay, this is what it is, you know, like always got to have a drink, always got to have a cigarette and always got to have a joint and always blah, blah, blah. And that was just all part of it. So that was like, say, my apprenticeship. And then, so this is like late 90s, and then the 2000s came around and there was the big roots explosion, blues and roots music, and I hopped aboard that kind of crazy ride. And I was into a lot of things that that scene represented as well, which was like health, you know. So I had my green tea on my rider and just a six-pack of Coopers to start with. That's how it started.
Yeah.
And then as time went on and then I started to get a band and I started to play like, you know, things more like Falls Festival and, you know, it got to be more of a sort of the gigs got bigger and bigger, more festival-y and more my age demographic that I was playing to got went way younger and it was just like party town and I was sort of super up for it. And the rider went from that green tea and six-pack of Coopers to insanity. Like, you know, probably not insanity by standards, but it was like three big bottles of spirits, a slab of beer, and a red and a white wine kind of thing. So
and no green tea?
The green tea, oh, that may have been on there. I can't remember if that was on there after you got through that rider.
What a rider that is to read, you know, like, oh, all of this booze and also some green tea.
Oh, and a green tea.
That's my chaser.
Yeah. And always along the way, there was always, you know, I had that theory of detox, retox kind of thing. So I was always trying to do the right thing. In between, wake up for a surf, do yoga. I was always trying to make up for it. I actually ate more healthy when I didn't drink than I do now probably because I was really, you know, a little bit more disciplined. You try to always make up for it. You probably know about that kind of vibe.
You know, I haven't thought of it like that, but I very much can relate to that where I would, you know, working in media for most of my adult life, it was a bit of a detox retox situation where, you know, during that radio period of time when you're under scrutiny and pressure and survey and results and stuff, you have to show up and do your job and go out and do your job and go to sales meetings and clients things. And there's always a drink in your hand. It just comes with the biz. And then I would go and do yoga and surfing retreats in Bali on my holidays by myself because I just needed to get away from everyone. Yeah. And I realized in sobriety, and I've spoken about this a fair bit on the podcast, but I realized that I'm an introvert, which was very shocking to me to discover. It's like, huh? Mm. I thought that I was extrovert, but that's why that was such a disconnect for me, because I actually was craving solace and solitude and chill and nights in, and I actually just thought that I was an extrovert and I loved doing all of this wild, crazy out on the town business, which I kind of didn't. So I totally get that. So at what point does detox retox stop working, and you know, like, when did you become sober curious? Because you mentioned leading into that last drink you'd been, you know, trying to be good by having mid strengths and maybe rein it in a little bit. So what spurred that thought pattern?
Well, I didn't really care so much about the health side of it, which is so weird because I was health conscious. And I did, like in every other part of my life, I was health conscious. It's almost like I knew, oh, no, yeah, but drinking, we can't touch that. We'll keep doing that. And, you know.
Yeah.
But for me, the main tipping point or real reason to quit was just like getting too slaughtered and sort of making a fool of myself or slurring or, you know, stuff like that. And that was the main thing that I wanted to curtail. So that's why I would have all sorts of deals. Like I used to tour in Canada a lot and play in the snow. And I remember doing some hellish tours there where I'd go, Canada. Right, I'm not having a drink over there. And every, you know, it was just so hard.
yeah.
But that's the cool thing. Once you go for the sobriety thing, for me, it was like a relief. Like, no more like, oh, I'll just not drink on this tour or I'll just not. I'll try, and the worst of all was trying to moderate, like, oh, I'll have four drinks. Like four drinks for me at a gig just didn't touch the sides. So I'd be I'd be like, it just doesn't, you'd almost get angry. Like, what's the point in this?
Yeah, 100%. And it's exhausting trying to, as you said, do deals with yourself constantly and then most likely let yourself down by crossing the boundary. This is, you know, like that's the blame shame cycle. It's like we get up with the best of intentions when we're hungover and we're like, you know what? I'm not going to drink today because I don't want to feel like crap, and I'm going to go and have a swim and eat a salad. And then you get to 2 p.m. and you're like, I'm only going to have one Corona. And like, you know, and then, but then it all goes out the window and then you're angry. You've let yourself down. You've broken promises to yourself. So then it's just rip the lid off because who cares? And then you wake up and that is that vicious cycle that can totally eat you alive and you don't even realize that you're doing it. And so I know the freedom that you're talking about, and it's like, if I could bottle that and sell that to people, I mean, I'd be a billionaire for starters, which would be kind of cool. But also, like, aside from the money, that freedom is actually what we're talking about. It's not about the alcohol necessarily. It is at the beginning, but I think the more you go down that road of not drinking, the more you become self-aware and the more you tune into your body and what you need and the clarity that comes and the chill, like it's freedom. It is the definition of freedom in my book, and I can just hear it when you talk about it. Like, I know exactly what you mean.
If anybody wants to break that guilt cycle that really keeps you in that loop, which it's so bad, there's one little trick that I never thought of in the time, because I like to take responsibility for my own actions and whatever.
Sure.
And we all think that's, you know, fair enough. And you know, people saying, oh, I was pissed and I did this and that, doesn't matter. We hate that because, you know, that's not taking responsibility for your actions.
Yeah.
But one really good thing that really worked for me as a technique is blame alcohol. I had never thought of doing that. And when I started to blame alcohol, like you think, oh, I was such a drunk idiot last night, I made a fool of myself. Well, you ask yourself, well, could I have done that without alcohol? You're like, well, no, I wouldn't be drunk. I can't slur without. I couldn't even slur any. Like, it would just be a funny imitation. I wouldn't be, you know.
Yeah.
None of it is possible without alcohol. Mm. So in my own mind, just that thing, and it's almost a relief to go, wow, I've never thought to blame alcohol, because alcohol gets the credit sometimes for your good time when you're a drinker, and none of the credit for your bad behavior, because then you just go beat yourself up and you say, well, some people can control their drink, so it just must be me.
Yeah,
but it is the nature of that particular drug.
Yeah.
That once you start drinking it, you know, you have one Corona in the hot sun, leads to another, and after a while it's a drunk person that's making the decision as to whether to have the next one. Mm. So if you actually go, you know, hang on a minute, you know, you had something to do with this too.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It really cures you of that cycle, because I feel like that guilt cycle is something that you think almost like you're doing something good for yourself, that you're beating yourself up about it. But actually, it, you know, I looked at my life and thought that never worked. As if it did anything, it would be helpful, but it never worked. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that, like, actually the thing of actually blaming alcohol for things that involve alcohol.
Yeah, it's such a great point. And I think the reason potentially that we spiral into self-loathing and we become the victim, like, I'm shit, I can't hold my booze, like, I'm the fool, is because we haven't been taught what to do with feelings of shame. Like, we just have not, no one, I didn't learn that at school. I learned a whole bunch of stuff at school that I've never used in my adult life. But nobody told me how to manage my emotions or my hormone levels. Mm. So I think that with, you know, education on and putting language to feelings and emotions is step number one, and calling shame for what it is, and then actually knowing and having a tool or a strategy on how to process those feelings gets you out of that that cycle as well. But I love your idea, and I talk about it in my book. The first chapter of my book is called Alcohol is the Problem. And it's about, it's about naming alcohol is the problem, sobriety is the solution. And it's not, you're not the problem.
Yeah.
Alcohol in you is the problem.
Yeah. Because imagine you without alcohol.
Right.
Yeah. Is that the problem?
If you were the problem, you would still be a dickhead without the alcohol in you.
Yeah.
But nine times out of 10, most people don't revert back into that, you know, drunk person when they're sober.
Yeah. If you haven't had a drink. Yeah, if you haven't had a drink and you're drunk, well, you need to go see someone.
Then you need to go to an inpatient program or, you know, like, we can't help you.
Yeah.
But that is just, it's a great, I'm so glad you circled back to that. Such a cool point. And I think, well, it helps people, right? That's another tool. It's another way that people can look at it and go, oh, maybe if I stop blaming Jerry for buying me shots and actually start blaming the thing that's the thing that changes my brain chemistry and is the actual thing that makes me feel like crap, and that rather than blaming myself, in order to spur you to take action. I think that's so such a great one.
And the other thing is, like, it's not, you know, like, I did 20 years of blaming myself. It's not it's not as if that worked. Like, if that worked, I'd go for that. But actually, it's not what worked. Like, calling it for what it is, because I was seeing an inaccurate picture, because alcohol gets off scot-free. Like I said, it gets all the credit for your good times.
Yeah.
And like, it's only, it is present in some good times, but so are a whole lot of other things. And if you take away all those other things, then it's not much of a good time. Like, if you're just sitting there drinking in a darkened room by yourself, it's not a good time either. So, but sometimes as you go along in your life, I know it happened for me with that habitual gigging and stuff. It's like alcohol got the credit for my spontaneity on stage and stuff. And actually, it was taking that away, but it still got the credit. It's like, oh, no, I have to get a head of steam on before I get on there, or I won't be able to play.
Mm.
You know, and it's like, it's not true at all, dude. You're actually getting kind of slow and sluggish upstairs on stage, and you're actually losing your creativity and your spark. And that was another funny little finding that I never expected. Like, I like to muck around on stage and sometimes make up songs and stuff on the spot. And I sort of stopped doing it after a while. And I just thought it was because I was getting older and I know I'm tired and blah, blah, blah. But when I quit drinking, I started doing that spontaneous stuff again.
Wow.
Because I was like, oh, I'm actually working at the proper speed. You know, yes. I've been impeding my creativity in the name of creativity in a way, because I thought it was, oh, yeah, this is all, I'm being an artist in it. You know?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people who are looking at their relationship with alcohol and going, oh, God, I really want to stop, but they're scared that they're going to lose themselves or they're going to have to change. And what I love about your story is you're still a musician. Like you haven't changed your career. You didn't have to blow up your entire life to stop drinking. You stopped drinking and then you still get to do what you're great at, what you're talented at, what you enjoy, what you're gifted at. And I'm sure that that has had an effect on your writing and your playing ability.
Oh, definitely. It's way more crisp. But the other thing is I'm doing it to people who are drinking. Like most people, when you quit drinking, unless you work in a bar or something or at Dan Murphy's, when you quit drinking, you're away from it if you want to be.
Yeah.
But for me, my first gig when I quit was at a festival. Everybody was partying.
Yeah.
And that was awesome actually for me because I was just like, right. It made me make the distinction straight away, like, okay, I'm here. I'm going to party with everyone right now and I'm not drinking. And it just made me do it naturally straight away. So even like not only does it not annoy me when people drink, early in the night I try and get on stage as early as I can.
Yes.
And they're just having a couple.
Yeah.
And they're sort of firing up and losing all their inhibitions and they start dancing and stuff. I quite like it, you know,
because like
they're on their journey and whatever. I don't know what they're, you know, they're not me. Like I know I was doing that every night of the week. I don't know what they're doing and I'm not interested, whatever floats their boat kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah.
So I kind of think in my quitting journey, it seemed hard at first to go straight into that 100%. Australian like festival season and
that's
wineries
a baptism
and all
by
that.
Fire. Like, yeah. It's like you stop doing a thing and then you just put yourself in the epicenter of the thing at a festival.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seemed like a challenge, but it really was a blessing because it made me make all those mental adjustments straight away. And I remember one thing, it was on one of those Aussie rock kind of bills that Jimmy Barnes was headlining and, you know, pretty drinky kind of situation, like all of those acts and that kind of music is associated, that kind of thing. And I remember it was all tents.
Oh, wait, tents. Not a row of tents. Like we're not camping.
A row of tents. It was a row of tents.
Not tents as in intense.
It was
but everyone
tent.
Was in tents, but camping ones. Got it.
Yeah. And those were the band rooms. And somebody came to sort out my rider and, you know, bring out the thing. And
oh, yeah.
I heard them talking to my sound guy and they said, oh, what does Ash need? And he said, Ash doesn't drink. And I was like, oh, wow. And just hearing that in third person and hear them go, oh, yeah. And it was like, wow, it's just not a big deal. No one cares.
No one cares.
Like, it's not like he didn't give some explanation. Oh, he's had to stop because blah, 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 blah. No. Oh, he doesn't drink. Oh, yeah, cool. What does he want?
Yeah.
Does he want Coke or does he want some water or
green
it's
tea?
Not a deal. No one gives a fuck. You know, just do your own thing.
Yeah.
You might have one friend. So anyway, hearing that changed something in me. I just was like, oh, I don't drink and it's not a big deal. And then that made it easier once I heard that. It was just like hearing it through the canvas. I don't know, something about that changed everything.
Well, maybe it's because you heard somebody talking about you, that is your identity, right? So when I hear people like, oh, Maz, like, oh, she's so bubbly. She's so fun. She's energetic. Mm. That's what I project. That's part of who I am. It's what people think about me. And so for you to hear your sound guy go, Ash doesn't drink, and not make excuses for you, like it's a bad thing or that he's embarrassed for you. You know, he was like, oh, Ash doesn't drink, and like was so casual about it. You hearing that, of course, that's like positive reinforcement. You're like, oh, yeah, I don't drink. And like no one cancelled the festival over it. Like no one told me you can't play your guitar tonight. Like it isn't a big deal. And I, you know what? It's made me think too that And I'm not suggesting I think around this time of year, people are like, it's New Year's, maybe next year's the year I don't drink. I'm not suggesting that you stop drinking one day and then go to a hen's party the next, even though I know people that have done that. But there is something for the imaginary scenarios we create in our head when we catastrophize about how intense and full on and crazy and just like how impossible that first sober event is going to be. And everyone's going to be looking at me and I don't know what to do and do it like. And when you just get that out of the way, then you don't even have to bother catastrophizing because you knew it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, that reminds me, there's one thing that I used to come on with Danny's How I Quit Alcohol groups and stuff and talk about a few things. And a lot of people gave us the feedback that they liked this little idea that I used to give them, which is another like technique kind of thing, the technique of it's easy.
It's easy.
So like you say, you're going to this hen's night or something and you say to yourself, okay, it's easy not to have a drink. That's not to say that you won't be triggered or you won't feel like, oh, I used to, or you won't feel like when somebody says, oh, go and just have one, you won't feel tempted. But your job is not to not have cravings. Your job is not to not be tempted. Your job is to just not go with some alcohol. And that bit is easy.
It's easy.
And the other things around it, well, they're to be expected. Like it's to be expected. Like, I don't think people should have a craving or feel like a drink and think, oh, no, that means a drink is going to jump up and force itself down my throat. Like, it's okay to have a craving or it's okay to feel like one or it's okay to be in the hot sun and you're like, oh, I've never come up against this. That I used to love a drink at that time and have a little pang. That's fine. Just don't pick up it. The easy bit is that it's easy to just stick to your commitment and just not pick up a drink and drink it. And I feel like that, using that to self-psychologize and just use that as a technique, it can be really helpful. And you think, right, I don't have, because it's up, say you make a year commitment, for example, it's up to you how much you suffer that commitment.
Yeah.
Like, and so I think that like approaching it as if it's easy, even though we know sometimes it's difficult, can actually make it a lot easier.
Yeah, no, that's such a really simple, that's one you can just stick in your tool belt. That's a great little, you just go into a social situation where there's alcohol and you just, it's like a mantra, like, this is easy. It's easy peasy lemon squeezy. It's just easy. And if you keep, that's the self-talk, like if you keep telling yourself it's easy, you'll get through those moments that might be challenging or might be triggering or, you know, might come up for you. I love
No one's going to pour it. The thing is, it might, and you can say, I might feel like it. I might feel like a drink, but it's easy not to go, that's the bit that's easy, like not the pouring of it down your throat.
100%.
It doesn't matter what you, it actually doesn't. And in those early days too, it's also a cool thing that like no matter what happens in your life, you've achieved something today because you didn't drink. You know that it was important for you to stop for whatever reason. So you can say, oh, that's cool. Like I achieved something. Like I didn't go lift weights. I didn't write a book. I didn't like, you know, do X, Y, and Z. But for me, I just didn't drink today. And actually that's an achievement. So you get to achieve every day too.
That's a really great way of looking at it. And I think that, you know, all this stuff, I think people curate according to their personality types, like what works for them, right?
Yeah.
So I know there's some people that are like, you know, they a tally mark every day, like they're, you know, they calculate. So they're like, every day I do a check on a list or a check off a thing. And that helps keep them accountable because you can see how many days you've done. You know, it's like the advent calendar. Oh my God. But, you know, how many counting down or counting up. So that could work. But I love the easy one is really accessible for everybody because everybody's got a brain, we think. Yeah. that you can use. And if you're not drinking, it's not being rewired to do like silly things.
Yeah.
It's firing the way it's supposed to fire. And so the more you say a thing, the more that is going to work in your brain. So it's easy, it's easy, it's easy actually then becomes the thing that is easy. And then you'll get to the end of the night and be like, well, that was easy.
And it's also like, say you've made a choice. You you do choose also your level of suffering. Like that's what I would say to people. Like don't suffer this choice more than you have to. Like you could choose to suffer it. Like, oh, I wish I could drink or whatever. And or you could be like, you know what? I've drunk the drinks. I think for me, I'd used to think to myself when I felt like a drink, well, you have had a few in your life.
We know how this is going to end, Ash. Yeah. Like, come on, buddy. It's not like you're going to just have a drink all of a sudden and it'll just not affect you, right?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And but also that feeling of like you're not really missing out because you do, I'd say like, well, you have had a drink before. Well, what you haven't done is like had a year off. So, you know, if you stick with that, you know, it works, you know. There's so many different little things like that. I like your little thing that you said about the tool belt. Like I think that's the way our mind works. So I have these little cues that I used past tense because I just don't. I sit in my band room now with bottles of wine and you know beers in the fridge and stuff when they haven't taken the rider out from the night before or they've just got it wrong and they just give it to me. And it's just like saying, oh, you know. You know, if you're vegetarian, you don't look at a steak and say, "Oh, it's you know, you because oh no, I don't eat that."
Yeah,
and alcohol became like that for me, and so it's like it's a mellow thing; it doesn't have a strong pull.
Yeah, you seem like a pretty mellow guy.
I needed a drink. What's that? Yeah, I am mellow, but I thought I needed that. Like to give it true context, I actually thought that I thought if a venue didn't supply a rider. That's probably about the only thing I'd ever get angry about, like because I thought it was an ethic that this is music. You've got to have a rider. You've got to have drinks. And like if there was a festival and it was put on by a council or something, I'd be like, these guys, they just don't understand music. Like, right, we're going to the bottler. This is wrong. So... It's for me, like I say, I thought it was an ethic. I thought it was something to do with music. So, And then once I stopped, I was like, oh, no, that's not true. It's fine.
Isn't that amazing too how you can hold this strong belief so tightly about yourself or an industry or a construct like music? Music and alcohol have to go together. Like that's what you spend most of your adult life. Thinking, believing, and making decisions based on. And then one day you wake up and that's completely changed because you're like, oh, no, actually, nope. I can still be a musician and I can still work in this industry and I can still perform and create and I don't need a drop of alcohol to do it. And, you know, I think sometimes letting go of those strong beliefs, there's a bit of grief involved because it's like for some people, you know, it's like, oh God, I really hung my hat on that hook for a really, really long time. And then I realized that the hook doesn't even exist, you know, like that's a huge paradigm shift to go from there to there for your story in particular. And sometimes there is a bit of grief involved, I think, for people, but that's okay. Like again, we didn't get taught how to deal with grief, but you just do it a day at a time and you don't have to drink alcohol to deal with grief because then that's just a whole other issue, right?
But if you can, I remember Danny and I during that time we studied a little bit of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming.
That's fun.
And, and it's so amazing. And just seeing that if you change your beliefs about yourself and your self-concept, then it's way easier to change anything. But that's right at the core of the thing.
Yes.
And so, like, if anybody could, I don't know if this is possible, if you could jump straight to that, you could quit like that. I mean, but I think sometimes you have to, that's why a year is a good time because you make the commitment, you just say, okay, I'm just not going to do it. And then you go through all of these different first times of X, first time of why, all these different first times, and then you show to yourself that that's not who you are. Who you are as a person, and alcohol is a substance, and then you're not having that substance, and then you show yourself, oh, that's not me. So you almost have to learn it. But if you just change your self concept straight away, you'd be able to do it just straight away with no problem. But I don't know if that's possible or not.
I don't know if it's possible. And like, for me, I love the journey. So I talk about my sobriety as like this progressive revelation of sobriety. And I feel like I'm 9 years in now, and I feel like year on year, I'm still peeling back layers. Like I am still getting to the core of my consciousness. I'm learning, I'm growing, I'm changing, I'm molding, and I'm there. I'm here for the journey of self-discovery and self-belief. And like, I don't know, I love that process. Like, I'm so into it. Like, it sounds weird. Like, I'm so into myself, but like, but like in a positive way, because I want to be the best that I can be. And this existed when I was drinking, because when I was drinking, it was self-loathing. There was no self-worth. There was imposter syndrome. It was so many complex things that I didn't even realize I was struggling to manage and process properly. And so I just love the idea each year. I'm like, 2024, what layers coming off this year, Maz? Like, where, you know? So but I am super interested in the NLP stuff. I haven't studied it, but I love the idea. I feel like I'm probably doing a version of it myself, right? You know, just like getting to the core consciousness of who you are. And it's
your beliefs.
Yeah. It's just a great, look, we're here for a journey, right? You got 24 hours in a day. How are you going to spend them? That's it.
Yeah, that's like that NLP stuff. That was just something that we did along the way. Like, I've really loved Danny's journey, because as she's been learning stuff and then she's been doing stuff with how I quit alcohol or whatever, like, I sort of do it with her along the way, and then I get the psychological benefits of that for myself, and
it's great.
We can bounce things off each other. Yeah, so that was really cool. And I would say that when anybody quits alcohol, you can just quit and you can leave a bottle-shaped hole in your life. And then, to me, the people who do that will be white-knuckling it the whole way and going, and missing what they had before, those good times that they perceive they had, because they haven't really felt the benefits of quitting. So I think what you should do when you quit, if you want to make quitting easier, is to get into the self-discovery, and to then you prove to yourself and actually learn something, anything at the same time. And then you're seeing how quitting improves something. You know, say if it's fitness, I lost so much weight and I got fit and blah, blah, blah. And so you're proving to yourself the benefits of it. And I think, and that, that's on a spiritual level and just on a physical level or whatever.
I love that.
And I think that's a really good way.
Yeah.
You know, because it's impossible to be stuck in any kind of rut while you're learning. And, you know, when you were drinking, most people, by the time you quit, you were in a rut. And it almost put you in that rut. So
it's a good rut buster. That I love that idea of like always being, and it's kind of it's one of the things that I kind of, I guess, have adopted in life, of always trying to be teachable, like remaining as a student, you know, and like not necessarily being an expert, but just always being teachable. And I love that you can learn your way through things, because you're right. Like, when you're learning, it's like it'll just happen on the side, the alcohol stuff.
Yes. And like, learning is the opposite of stagnation. So like, that's why it is good. Like, I heard that somebody said that's a saying in Kung Fu, which I know nothing about, but like,
neither.
Beginner's mind.
Yes.
Yeah. The beginner's mind, you know, just if you keep that, and I like to keep that in my general life, actually, you know, that keeps you alive. You know, nothing's more sort of midlife stagnation-y than not learning, just doing the same shit that you've always done your whole adult life. But as soon as you start learning new things, it brings a vitality into your life. So, you know, I think you're so right about that.
I love that. Ash, you've got so many little gems. You just like, just keep dropping these little golden nuggets for everybody. Thank you so much for your time. And I'd like to end our conversation with a quote from my favorite Kung Fu movie, which is Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, and yes.
Kung
Fu Panda
says, skidoosh.
Oh, hey, you're still here. Well, let me tell you about Booze Break. Booze Break is an audio series that I created and host with my good friend Lindy Cohen. You can find out more information by visiting myboozebreak.com. If you want to take a bit of time away from alcohol, we can be your Booze Break besties. Here's a little sample of what you can expect, and the first episode is free. If you want to listen to it, you can just head to myboozebreak.com. There was a disconnect between what I was feeling and the life that I had.
This is just about that better relationship with alcohol.
Felt like I looked through a new lens.
We are your guides, helping you get this transformation because you really deserve that.
We've got a go-to guide on how to do it, and we're going to deliver it all to you guys through this audio series.
An experiment for yourself.
I'm happier than ever, so much better without you.
Hello and welcome to Your Booze Break. My name is Maz Compton. I'm a radio host and a podcaster, and I haven't had a drink since 2015.
That's a long time, Maz.
It's a really long time, Lindy.
I'm Lindy Cohen. I'm a dietitian and nutritionist, and it hasn't been that long for me without booze. It's just been a few months, really, 6 months post having a baby, and I am loving it. And I want that little high for you guys as well.
And that's what we're here to do. We're here to help you have a healthier relationship with alcohol for whatever that looks like for wherever you're at. So whether you have a couple of glasses a week or a couple of bottles a night, we're not here to judge you. We're just here to help you get to a place in your life where alcohol isn't controlling you.
And we don't need you to say, I'm never drinking again. Whether it's forever or for just right now, this is just about that better relationship with alcohol so you feel more in control and it doesn't feel like alcohol is controlling you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.